Who is the shortest player who ever played baseball, who played in the NHL?
I'm going to say there has been someone that has played baseball.
No.
In Major League Baseball that is 5'2" or shorter. 5'2" is the line.
You just said under 5 foot.
I know. Listen, 4'11" is really short.
It's very really
circus
short.
Circus Carney.
There are not a lot of men around the world, you know, shorter than 5 feet. But 5'2" is the line. I'll go under. I think someone's like 5'1¾". Like 110 years ago, playing for, you know, the Pittsburgh Pirates.
Well, you obviously Googled it.
Like, I have not.
Crapler's coming over the top saying, look at this guy. He was 4'11", 212 pounds.
No access to any information. None whatsoever.
Well, I'm reading it quickly. David sent it to me, but it's a guy named Eddie Gadel or something like that. Yeah, you're right. Born 1925. Died 1961, smallest player to appear in Major League Baseball game. Standing
did he get
there
legitimately? Like, I feel like we're going to go down a dangerous road here and start
Wikipedia.
Referencing someone who won a contest or, you know, something like that. But
we've got to be careful with it. But it says he's three feet 7 inches, but I don't know about that.
There's no way that's real. There it is up on TSN, too. There's
you
no way
that's
real. That can't be real. 3'7"?
That looks like that looks at my son. It looks like that. My 3-year-old looks like that as far as age.
Yes.
Age-wise. Yeah.
Yes. There's no way three. That's a publicity stunt. Like,
you think so?
There's no chance that guy was. What's he hitting? What's he hitting in the majors? And what is the strike zone? Like, honestly.
I don't know, but I don't know why I thought that, but you mentioned, like, grit grinder, 5'4", 210. I'm like, 5'4" is really, you know, that's on a shorter scale, right? And like for baseball, because you see, guy Randy Johnson was how tall? 6'6"?
He was 6'10".
6'10".
A Randy Johnson sliding curve would hit that cat right in the top of the head. Like,
yeah,
it would hit
strike
the top
zone
of his skull.
Listen, I am totally ignorant to it. I do not know the backstory. I've never heard that name before.
Neither am I. I just, like, my point being is it's kind of funny because I was like, it would be, you know, neat to see. I want to know who the shortest NHL player who ever played an NHL game is.
Dregs might know.
Dregger might. I mean, he's a fountain of information and trivia. Here he is, our TSN Hockey Insider, Darren Dregger. Do you have any idea? Who would be your guess, like, the shortest NHL player? Not even a name. What do you think the height would be, Dregs? Shortest player.
Like, obviously be less than 5'6", so I'm going to say 5'5".
Brian Gionta's little brother.
Oh,
maybe.
Steven Gionta.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Or Steve Kariya.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Paul Kariya's younger brother or maybe his older brother, but Steve Kariya was a small player.
I'd say 5'5". How tall was Fleury? Theron Fleury was what?
5'6". Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Marty St. Louis wouldn't be much taller. Would he be 5'7", maybe 5'8"?
Yeah, mm-hmm. In that range.
I'm thinking Nathan Gerby is a guy that comes to mind who is.
Right.
There was a picture of him recently, I thought, with like Chara standing next to him, and it was like, you know, it was Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito, basically.
Well, that picture of Aaron Judge standing beside Jose Altuve is a famous one where Judge is 6'9 or 6'10, and Altuve, I think, is 5'5", 5'6".
Yeah, he's short.
Right.
And it just, I mean, they're both great players. Both MVP caliber players. Altuve's won one. So yeah. I guess there it goes. It doesn't really matter.
So I have a short, tall story, and I'll keep it short, but it dates back to Zdeno Chara arriving in Ottawa in the, I guess it was the Wade Redden trade, right, with the New York Islanders. So I'm doing Ottawa Senators hosting at the time. So we go to interview Zdeno Chara between the first and second period, the intermission, and the camera guy had like a milk box there for me to stand on to do the interview. And so I'm standing on it. I'm like, well, yeah, I mean, it makes sense. He's 6'9", and on skates, he's 7 feet. Big Z came over. He looks down at the box. He looks up at me. He goes, this isn't a circus. What are you doing? And I'm like, wow, I'm trying to explain. You know, I'll have my arm will be stretched and I'll be on my tippy toes trying to hold the microphone. He goes, I don't care. He goes, no, no, get rid of that thing. And I had to, he was nice enough about it, but he basically said, I'm not doing the interview if you know, everybody knows you're not 6'3". So oh, see, what are you trying to do here?
I like that. So he was coming at you like, you're not getting anywhere based on my size. Like you, everyone knows I'm a big dude, so you can't claim to the world that you're tall too. I'm not going to accept that.
Well, he didn't. He just goes, hey, I'm 6'9" plus skates. I mean, hey, interview me the way you interview everybody else, or don't bother. So I did the interview standing on my flaps and looked like an idiot, but. We stayed true to Zdeno Chara and TV.
I love it. That's great.
I love it, too.
We haven't brought up this story out of Arizona. And we have, I mean, we haven't talked about the Arizona Coyotes really at all this year. And, you know, I'm in a way so sick and tired of the organization being what they are because we have been talking about it for 10 or 15 years.
Tiring, man.
It's just every year is a new owner and there's more problems and people aren't getting paid. And there was a really compelling and riveting and well-documented story in The Athletic. Katie Strang wrote it, just detailing, you know, what's going on down there with ownership and how employees feel about it. And you're as connected as anyone, Dregs. I mean, what has been the response league-wide, and how do you feel about what's going on in Arizona for the, you know, what feels like 400th time in a row?
Yeah, well, I'm on board with you guys there. And trust me, I've covered more than my share of tough Arizona Coyotes stories, including the not-so-recent one where John Chaika and the group were involved in the draft schmozzle, and then ultimately, you know, the demise of John Chaika, and then the fact that, you know, he's since been effectively exiled, suspended by the National Hockey League. So I've covered my share, to be sure. You know, as you guys have said, and I will echo your sentiments on this, I mean, this is terrific reporting by Katie Strang in The Athletic. You know, it's not like she picked up the phone and called some angry ex-employee, and this individual just spilled their guts. And here's what's going on with new ownership, and this happened and that happened. No, I mean, would you interview 50 people?
Yeah.
And went directly, you know, to ownership of the Arizona Coyotes, and then by extension to general manager Bill Armstrong. You know, there isn't a whole lot of reaction across the league because I would think that most clubs are kind of viewing it the same way we are. I don't think that the NHL head office was very happy about it. Obviously, based on the statement of the Arizona Coyotes, they didn't like it. And for me now, it's going to be interesting to see, okay, well, you don't like it. You're threatening legal action. Are you going to follow through? And if you are, then what about the disclosure opportunities here that come along with it? Katie's never going to disclose sources, but more might be uncovered publicly than ownership of the Arizona Coyotes actually wants out there, to be fair. And then by extension, not a real good look for Bill Armstrong, right? I mean, this is a guy who respected management type, you know, cut his teeth in St. Louis under a very good manager in Doug Armstrong. Probably didn't know what he was getting into, to be fair, but he embraces the opportunity because there are so few general manager jobs in the National Hockey League. I'm guessing that if he had a mulligan on that interview with Katie, his approach would be different because he didn't come across very professional, in my opinion, based on what I read. So that's how we digest it. But I think in the grand scheme of things, there's not a lot of surprise around all of it. But I'll tell you this, guys, you know, you ask any NHL owner, they would support Marullo only because when you look at his net worth, the family's net worth, it's published at $2 billion with a B, $2 billion. So even though there's some stuff going on from a business standpoint that, you know, I'm sure the commissioner's office doesn't advocate or condone, the fact that they've got financial stability operating that organization for the first time since when? Ever?
It's been a long time.
Right. That's a huge, huge sign of relief to the owners across the National Hockey League who are more than fed up with the league propping up the Arizona Coyotes financially.
And I read the article, Dregs, and I agree. Like when somebody's net worth is got a B in it, then you know there's success, that you know they've got backing. But I also, I mean, that was the thing that kind of took it away from me in the article is the way they conduct business. And yeah. that's where, you know, if you conduct business and you have a lot of net worth, but it's like you sign a contract for X amount of dollars. Well, we're not paying that. The minute right. that it's net 90 days, now we'll start to negotiate on that price. And that's what kind of took it for me, because you're hearing all of these multiple stories coming out of there of signing bonuses weren't paid and laid on this and that. Like, you can handle, there's different businesses that work that way. And I think that was their model, and they're trying to bring that to the National Hockey League, where it's different. You know, you've got to be up front. You have to have some transparency and all that. I just think, and again, this is, you know, really just thinking out loud, the NHL had the one fiasco with that one owner. Was it Spano is his name, where he bought the Islanders for like $5,000. It was something crazy. He had no money, and it was a house of cards. That would be the only thing that scares me, is if this guy and his all of his money's net worth is tied up in everything. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. There's actually no cash there. That's what, and you're leveraged, and you're negotiating this, and you're negotiating that.
Well, they better have learned from that.
That's what scared me from that article, reading between the lines. It's like they work a different way.
Honestly, the first thing I thought of was, do we owe John Chayka an apology? Because the hockey world turned on him quick. Did he bail because he said, I'm not working here? Like, this is a disaster.
Yeah, I don't know.
He should have.
Yeah.
But I mean, haven't heard an explanation on that.
Well, you're right. We've never officially or formally been given that explanation other than through sourcing. And, you know, Arizona Coyotes sources would tell you, league sources would tell you that it was how John Chayka was trying to terminate an existing contract with the Coyotes that ended up getting him in trouble, right? So what that means, you know, the devices he used, whatever, who knows? John Chayka is probably as happy as any to be out and looking forward to the expiration date so he can get back in whatever in capacity that is. But, you know, I just to revisit this and perhaps wrap it up, I just think that when you issue a statement the way the Arizona Coyotes issued a statement in response to a well-done media report, you better be ready. Better be ready, because how many times historically have we seen a story like this, or, again, a deeply investigated story come out where then all of a sudden 50 turns into 150 people. And some of them are willing to go on record, talk about all the stuff and the crap that was going on and the things that they've had to put up with. So if the Marullo family wants to go to war with Katie Strang and the Athletic, then they better be ready, because they may not like what's coming down the pike from other sources that maybe don't want to hide behind the cloak of anonymity. Maybe they can come forward and tell their truth, and that might not be good.
Yeah.
Dregs, have you talked to any executives in the league about, like pro-scouting players? I mean, I heard Vertanen's name popping around. Noodles brought him up earlier in the show. I mean, what are people, executives who can't be in the building? I mean, as much as he might need a change of scenery, who's watching him for 4 or 5 minutes, whatever he played the other night, and say, yeah, I got to give him a chance, without getting a real deep dive, close look at him?
Real hard. Oh, real, real hard. And look, that's also not to change conversations, but that's why every manager is pushing. And Mark Bergevin, the most recent to come out to say they got to move the draft. It's because, kids aren't playing. That matters. But when they are playing and you can't be in the building and you can't see these guys, you know, with the naked eye and watch them in other areas, it's next to impossible to cover your...
Okay, well, throw it on hold. Well, it's just, I think I can't really hear Dregs. The audio is cutting in and out. We'll see if we can get him back on to answer that, because I want to hear that answer in terms of the draft, too. Like, I heard that maybe they're thinking of the first round, but, you know, moving second through seven beyond the second round to next year or whatever, but... His phone was going wonky.
You're right. I think you have to move it, because these kids, they've had no opportunity to play, and some of them are being sent to the AHL recently. I know of a kid that's playing
in
Austria. Like, they're just trying. Agents are just trying to find places for these kids to play, and you know, these are critical years for development. Like, critical.
Well, Rasmus Sandin, who was playing, broke his foot last night. Marlins play their first game. He blocks a shot, breaks his foot.
Mm-hmm. I know.
And, you know, it feels almost like a lost season for him, where last year was a lost season. That's going to be almost two calendar years where your number one prospect is barely going to play.
Yeah.
What's that going to mean for him? You know,
it is.
Not going to be easy. We'll see what Dregs. I'm not sure if we're going to be able to get him
back.
He might
have said to hell with us, which is fine. But
what I want to ask you guys, Dregs, is who knows what's going to happen. What did you think of the veteran who went on the flying route for Valentine's Day to impress his lady friend? Veteran move or not so good?
I thought it was a hero move. Heroes, I mean, hero can be interpreted every which way. But
so he,
I don't know.
He was a pilot, and he owns a plane. He took his, girlfriend and flew her around Toronto or something like that?
Oh, yeah. A heart-shaped pattern to show his affection.
Yeah.
I think it's Rod Langway veteran status.
You like that play?
Yeah. If you got your
I mean,
own
it's a
bird.
Cool play.
Come on.
It's a very cool play. The heart is a bit much. Like, you don't know that when you're flying around. You know, the heart shape.
He flies around.
Pattern. He does fly around. All right, we have Dregs back. Dregs, go ahead. And in terms of the draft and scouting, we lost you there.
Yeah, sorry. That was a tough one to follow. I gave my wife chocolate and Shoppers Drug Mart chocolate, no less.
Same.
So I'm not flying around in hearts.
No.
What I was saying was, you know, that's why you're getting so much pushback from NHL clubs on wanting to move the draft so that their scouting department can physically put eyes on these kids when these kids are back playing, right? So that you can absorb everything that goes into the game and their play. And, you know, that's got to be the same with some of these younger players. Like Jake Virtanen's, 24 years old? Adam Gaudette is a 24-year-old. You know, are they projects? I mean, it feels a little early to label them as that at this point of their career, but every player has a player like Virtanen or Gaudette, and that seems to be what's gumming it up for the Vancouver Canucks. And Vancouver has very specific financial needs. You know, Virtanen's got another year at 255, but it's not just the cap hit. It's the cash payout that matters to the Vancouver Canucks as well. So Benning's going to have to sit tight on this and maybe expect or wait for another injury from a team with interest, and maybe at that point, Virtanen will get a fresh start. But to O's point before we broke up there, I mean, he had a good game on Saturday, and then the next game, he makes a mistake and he gets stapled to the bench and plays under 7 minutes. So that's not helping the player at that point.
No, that certainly wouldn't. Well, we'll see. I mean, we're getting closer to the trade deadline anyway, and hopefully more action and, you know, news will be coming out as we get closer to April 12th. Great stuff, buddy. We'll do it again soon. Thank you for this.
All right, guys. Have a good night.
There's Darren Dreger, TSN Hockey Insider.
See,
go ahead.
Sorry to interrupt. If Virtanen was a left shot, I'd have interest for him for the Leafs because I think he's a guy who can play in your top nine. He's hard to play against when he's playing. And, you know, you're going to be fishing around, Kyle's been fishing around on guys like, you know, VC and Galchenyuk, and Patan was on the first power play the other day. Like, you know, I would argue that Virtanen would be an upgrade on those players based on the style of play when he's playing.
Because Vertanen's a big discussion about a guy like that, Jamie. What is happening here? Is he not getting the opportunity? I have never seen a coach try to screw over a player because he's playing too good.
No,
so
you're
he's
right.
He's clearly not playing good enough to get an opportunity, and when he does get the opportunity, I don't think that being in the gym is his favorite thing in the world to do. I'm not sure. I'm just guessing. But
right.
he's got to show commitment, and once he gets the opportunity, he's got to make the most of it.
I think he's
Trust
just
me,
too
I've been there. I get the deal. He's got to do more.
He's also got a decent ticket. And
that's what I mean. Like, that's what I was talking about. Like, if
concern.
He was a left-handed shot, I'd be looking at him for the Leafs because I think he's a guy who would be an upgrade on the other projects you have in the stable.
I can't disagree with that. I also wonder if Benning, because he took him sixth overall, he feels like he's got to get a price.
Dude, I've been the biggest fan of this guy, Hayes, for years. I'm like, I love this guy. Get him here. Get him somewhere. He skates. He's mean. And then all of a sudden, he just falls off the face of the earth.
That's the issue. Yeah, inconsistency is, you know, for a team like this in Toronto, too, where they're trying to prove maturity, bringing in a guy like that may not be the greatest idea. But I think it's also, will Benning be willing to just say, we've got to move on? Or will he say, I've got to get quality back? And because right. why would teams pay for quality when you're clearly sour on a guy?
You're barely you're right. playing him. But I think there's what you do is you look at other organizations that have a Virtanen, a guy that they're, you know, that they've drafted high and they're disappointed in. And
right.
Because everyone has, you know, every organization, they may not have that exact player, but they may have somebody like that
along
in the organization.
Those lines.
I'm sure yeah. Jimmy Benning watches Josh Anderson in Montreal saying, that guy competes, he works, he chips in scoring, he's a goal scorer. And our guy is playing 4 minutes a night, and he's supposed to be Josh Anderson or a poor man's version of Tom Wilson or something like that. And he's not that.
Yeah. No, he's not right now.